This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, I'm Maxine Clark, and you're listening to another edition of The Economist. And we'll start with the world this week in business. As it adjusts to slower demand for its electric vehicles, Tesla is reportedly set to shed 10% of its global workforce, or around 14,000 jobs. Adding to the woes of Elon Musk's firm, two senior executives said they were leaving. Tesla's deliveries fell in the first quarter of this year. As other car makers, especially in China, step up their EV ambitions, Tesla is facing intense competition in markets that it used to have to itself a few years ago. Its share price is down by 37% this year. The company wants shareholders to reaffirm Mr. Musk's pay at its annual general meeting in June, after a court in Delaware struck it down in January. The latest estimates from the IMF suggest that global GDP is on track to grow by 3.2% this year. The fund said the world economy remains remarkably resilient and that there would be less economic scarring than it had thought from the pandemic. The biggest upgrades to its forecasts for the largest economies it tracks were for America, where the IMF now thinks GDP will expand by 2.7% and Russia projected to grow by 3.2%. China's economy grew by a better-than-expected 5.3% in the first quarter of 2024, year-on-year, helped by a 6.1% rise in industrial production. Much of the growth came in January and February. In March, retail sales struggled and the output of cement plummeted, highlighting the problems besetting the country's property market. Markets were rattled by figures that showed retail sales growing rapidly in America, more evidence that the economy remains red hot. Investors pushed back their bets on an interest rate cut from the Federal Reserve. They were also perturbed by comments from Jerome Powell, the Fed's chairman, about inflation taking longer than expected to fall to the central bank's 2% target. The numbers game. Britain's annual inflation rate slowed to 3.2% in March from 3.4% in February. Inflation is now lower in Britain than in America, where it is 3.5%, but higher than the euro areas, where it stands at 2.4%. Still, the figures caused traders to think that the Bank of England might not reduce interest rates until September or November. Goldman Sachs released a set of quarterly earnings that at last delighted investors. Net profit surged by 28% in the first quarter year-on-year to $4.1 billion, helped by a 32% jump in revenue from investment banking and a 10% rise in revenue from trading. The results take some of the pressure off David Solomon, the bank's chief executive, who faces a shareholder proposal at the impending annual general meeting to vote against his pay award. Microsoft announced a $1.5 billion strategic investment in G42, a firm developing artificial intelligence technology in Abu Dhabi, which is backed by the Emirates government. The deal has a blessing of the Biden administration, which persuaded G42 to divest from China and focus on America. A little of the shine came off ASML, Europe's most valuable tech company, when it reported a big drop in quarterly sales. The value of the company's order book for the lithography machines it supplies, which are an essential component in chip manufacturing, plunged to $3.8 billion in the first quarter. ASML expects the second half of the year to be stronger, in line with the industry's continued recovery from the downturn in the chip cycle. LVMH saw its weakest quarter for sales growth since the post-pandemic boom 3 years ago. The luxury goods company recorded a big drop in revenue from champagne and watches and jewelry in the first 3 months of 2024, though sales in Japan grew by double digits, helped by the weak yen and an influx of Chinese shoppers. Meanwhile, Bernard Arnault, LVMH's boss, showed up his succession plan by asking shareholders to approve the addition of two of his sons to the board. They join two other siblings. CVC Capital Partners, one of Europe's biggest private equity firms, announced its intention to list shares on the Euronext exchange in Amsterdam. CVC had planned an IPO in 2022, which was upended by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. It also considered a float last year, but postponed it in November, amid market uncertainties. Running ahead. Following its first annual loss in 3 decades, Adidas raised its profit guidance for the year on the back of strong sales in the first quarter. Adidas may face a new reputational problem, however, with the revelation that Rishi Sunak, Britain's Prime Minister, has a penchant for its popular Samba trainers. Mr. Sunak, whom one newspaper has described as a geeky tech bro, recently made a humorous, fulsome apology for reducing the hip appeal of shoes. "I've worn them for many, many years," he said. And now moving on to the finance and economics section of this week's Economist. This article is titled "Earning Power, Winning the Generation Game." The world economy has been kind to today's youngsters. Generation Z is taking over. In the rich world, there are at least 250 million people born between 1997 and 2012. About half are now in a job. In the average American workplace, the number of Gen Zers, sometimes also known as Zoomers, working full-time is about to surpass the number of full-time baby boomers, those born from 1945 to 1964, whose careers are winding down. America now has more than 6,000 Zoomer chief executives and 1,000 Zoomer politicians. As a generation becomes more influential, companies, governments, and investors need to understand it. Pundits produce a lot of fluff about the cohort. Recent research from Frito-Lay, a crisp maker, finds that Gen Zers have a strong preference for snacks that leave remnants on their fingers, such as cheese dust. Yet different generations also display deeper differences, in part shaped by the economic context in which they grow up. Germans, who reached adulthood during the high inflation 1920s, came to detest rising prices. Americans who lived through the Depression tended to avoid investing in the stock market. Many argue that Gen Z is defined by its anxiety. Such warriors include Jonathan Haidt, a social psychologist in New York University, whose new book, The Anxious Generation, is making waves. In some ways, Gen Zers are unusual. Young people today are less likely to form relationships than those of yesteryear. They are more likely to be depressed or say they were assigned the wrong sex at birth. They are less likely to drink, have sex, be in a relationship, indeed to do anything exciting. Americans aged between 15 and 24 spend just 38 minutes a day socializing in person on average, down from almost an hour in the 2000s, according to official data. Mr. Haidt lays the blame on smartphones and the social media they enable. His book has provoked an enormous reaction. On April 10th, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the governor of Arkansas, echoed Mr. Haidt's arguments as she outlined plans to regulate children's use of smartphones and social media. Britain's government is considering similar measures. But not everyone agrees with Mr. Haidt's thesis, and the pushing and shoving over Gen Z's anxiety has obscured another way in which the cohort is distinct. In financial terms, Gen Z is doing extraordinarily well. This, in turn, is changing its relationship with work. Consider the group that precede Gen Z. Millennials, who were born between 1981 and 1996. Many entered the workforce at a time when the world was reeling from the global financial crisis of 2007-2009, during which young people suffered disproportionately. In 2012-2014, more than half of the Spanish youngsters who wanted a job could not find one. Greece's youth unemployment rate was even higher. Britney Spears' Work Bitch, a popular song released in 2013, had an uncompromising message for young millennials. If you want good things, you have to slog. Gen Zers who have left education face very different circumstances. Youth unemployment across the rich world at about 13% has not been this low since 1991. Greece's youth unemployment rate has fallen by half from its peak. Hoteliers in Kalamata, a tourist destination, complain about a labour shortage, something unthinkable just a few years ago. Popular songs reflect the zeitgeist. In 2022, the protagonist in a Beyoncé song boasted, "I just quit my job." Olivia Rodrigo, a 21-year-old singer popular with American Gen Zers, complains that a former love interest's career is really taking off. Many have chosen to study subjects that help them find work. In Britain and America, Gen Zers are avoiding the humanities and are going instead for more obviously useful things like economics and engineering. Vocational qualifications are also increasingly popular. Young people then go on to benefit from tight labour markets. Like Beyoncé's protagonist, they can quit their job and find another one if they want more money. In America, hourly pay growth among 16 to 24-year-olds recently hit 13% year-on-year, compared with 6% for workers aged 25 to 54. This was the highest young person premium since reliable data began. In Britain, where youth pay is measured differently, the average hourly pay of people aged 18 to 21 rose by an astonishing 15% last year, outstripping pay rises among other age groups by an unusually wide margin. In New Zealand, the average hourly pay of people aged 20 to 24 increased by 10%, compared with an average of 6%. Strong wage growth boosts family incomes. A new paper by Kevin Corinth of the American Enterprise Institute, a think tank, and Jeff Larimore of the Federal Reserve assesses Americans' household income by generation after accounting for taxes, government transfers, and inflation. Millennials were somewhat better off than Gen X, those born between 1965 and 1980, when they were the same age. Zoomers, however, are much better off than millennials were at the same age. The typical 25-year-old Gen Zer has an annual household income of over $40,000, more than 50% above baby boomers at the same age. Gen Z's economic power was on display at a recent concert by Ms. Rodrigo in New York. The mostly female teenagers and 20-somethings in attendance had paid hundreds of dollars for a ticket. Queues for merchandise stalls selling $50 T-shirts stretched around the arena. Ms. Rodrigo will have no trouble shifting merchandise in other parts of the world as her tour moves across the Atlantic. That is in part because Gen Zers who have entered the workplace are earning good money throughout the rich world. In 2007, the average net income of French people aged 16 to 24 was 87% of the overall average. Now it is equal to 92%. In a few places, including Croatia and Slovenia, Gen Zers are now bringing in as much as the average. Some Gen Zers protest, claiming that higher incomes are a mirage because they do not account for the exploding cost of college and housing. After all, global house prices are near all-time highs and graduates have more debt than before. In reality, though, Gen Zers are coping because they earn so much. In 2022, Americans under 25 spent 43% of their post-tax income on housing and education, including interest on debt from college, slightly below the average for under 25s from 1989 to 2019. Bolstered by high incomes, American Zoomers' home ownership rates are higher than millennials at the same age, even if they are lower than previous generations. What does this wealth mean? It can seem as if millennials grew up thinking a job was a privilege and acted accordingly. They are deferential to bosses and eager to please. Zoomers, by contrast, have grown up believing that a job is basically a right, meaning they have a different attitude to work. Last year, Gen Zers boasted about quiet quitting, where they put in just enough effort not to be fired. Others talk of bare minimum Monday. The girl boss archetype, who seeks to wrestle corporate control away from domineering men, appeals to millennial women. Gen Z ones are more likely to discuss the idea of being snail girls, who take things slowly and prioritize self-care. The data support the memes. In 2022, Americans aged between 15 and 24 spent 25% less time on working and work-related activities than in 2007. A new paper published by the IMF analyzes the number of hours that people say they would like to work. Not long ago, young people wanted to work a lot more than older people. Now they want to work less. According to analysis by Jean Twenge of San Diego State University, the share of American 12th graders, age 17 or 18, who see work as a central part of life, has dropped sharply. Another consequence is that Gen Zers are less likely to be entrepreneurs. We estimate that just 1.1% of 20-somethings in the EU run a business that employs someone else, and in recent years the share has drifted down. In the late 2000s, more than 1% of the world's billionaires, as measured by Forbes, a magazine, were millennials. Back then, pundits obsessed over ultra-young tech founders such as Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, Patrick Collison, Stripe, and Evan Spiegel, Snapchat. Today, by contrast, less than 0.5% on the Forbes list are Zoomers. Who can name a famous Gen Z startup founder? Gen Zers are also producing fewer innovations. According to Russell Funk of the University of Minnesota, young people are less likely to file patents than they were in the recent past. Or consider the Billboard Hot 100, measuring America's most popular songs. In 2008, 42% of hits were sung by millennials. 15 years later, only 29% were sung by Gen Zers. Taylor Swift, the world's most popular singer-songwriter, titled her most famous album 1989, after the year of her birth. The world is still waiting for someone to produce 2004. How long will Gen Z's economic advantage last? A recession would hit young people harder than others, as recessions always do. Artificial intelligence could destabilize the global economy, even if youngsters may, in time, be better placed to benefit from the disruption. For now, though, Gen Z has a lot to be happy about. Between numbers at Madison Square Garden, Olivia Rodrigo sits at the piano and counsels her fans to be thankful for all that they have. Growing up is awesome, she says. You have all the time to do all the things you want to do, the time and the money. This article is titled Military Recruitment. Your country needs more of you. Western armies are short of people. Conscription is not the answer yet. Mandatory military service is under discussion once more in Europe. The reason? The possibility of Ukraine's defeat looms large, as does the threat of a future President Donald Trump abandoning NATO. Boris Pistorius, Germany's defense minister, says that Europe must be ready for war before the decade's end. He describes dropping a one-year period of service for school leavers in 2011 as a mistake. Britain's army chief, General Patrick Sanders, has called for a citizen army. Compulsory stints in the armed forces can take several forms, including the conscription of civilians of any age, call-ups using lotteries, and a standard period of military service for young people after they leave school. Compulsion is being considered because many rich countries struggle to recruit enough people for their all-volunteer professional forces. Some countries look admiringly at NATO's Nordic and Baltic members, all of which have some form of mandatory service, which enjoys high levels of public support. Sweden ended it in 2011, only to resurrect it in 2018. Is this an approach that other countries should follow? The short answer is not yet. Armies should be designed to reflect both geography and how they expect to fight. In countries with relatively small populations that have borders close to Russia, such as Estonia and Finland, public acceptance of conscription is high and training prepares forces for a porcupine defense against an invader. There is a strong sense of a shared national endeavor. For similar reasons, military service in Israel, which faces constant security threats, is uncontroversial. Aside from resentment that the ultra-Orthodox do not have to serve. Taiwan and South Korea have conscription because they too are close to bellicose powers. Citizens in most of the rest of the rich world do not yet feel an imminent threat. So, for conscription to be workable, there would need to be a clear and shared understanding of why it was needed. That is lacking in countries such as Britain and France, where it is not obvious what conscripts could do in a modern, technologically sophisticated army. Besides, in a crisis, each country must field a full division, 30,000 troops with heavy equipment, within 30 days if needed by NATO. Dealing with lots of conscripts could be a distraction. Because conscripting young people infringes harshly on their liberty, the policy would need public support. Even Ukraine, in existential peril, found lowering the call-up age from 27 to 25 this month politically tricky. Undoubtedly, the difficulties faced by most of Europe's armed forces in recruiting regular soldiers and building proficient reserves needs redress. But they can mostly be resolved by means other than compulsion. First, consider raising soldiers' salaries. Older folks sometimes grumble about the supposed character flaws that make young people unwilling to serve. But poor pay and conditions are by far the biggest obstacles to recruitment when job seekers have other choices. Defense budgets are rising, but will need to do so faster. NATO members' target of spending 2% of GDP on defense will not be enough to cover both higher wages and new kit. There should also be more experimentation. For instance, with one-year trials of service that can be combined with university studies or other training. And despite much discussion, few armies have done enough to recruit women and combat sexual harassment. Second, more civil society support is needed to attract those with the specialist skills required in emergencies. In addition to wooing more volunteers to augment regular forces, armies could swell reserves by making soldiers who leave the force agree to annual training days until they reach their mid-40s. In this way, Britain could mobilize as many as 300,000 such people if needed. The numbers might be even higher in France and Germany, as they have larger armies. In these tense times, countries should still maintain plans for how, if the worst came to the worst, a much wider mobilization might occur. To deter the most dangerous enemies, you must be ready for a war that you do not want to fight. Just ask the courageous Ukrainians. And with that, we come to the end of this week's edition of The Economist. I'm Maxine Clark signing off. Until next time, goodbye.